afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and we have a sponsor this hour, Team Power.
What, you didn't want me to do the lead-in for that again?
No, I can handle it. I'm going to go for it. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. They're on up on 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they do everything tractors. If you need a John Deere Kubota tractor, go see them. They'll take good care of you up there. They do part sales service. They do it all. Their phone number is 226-9226, and you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com. So there you go.
Without any failures there. Yeah. Very, very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can find everything about the program here at wethepeopleradio.us, and we have archives that go back to October of 2010, I believe. So we've done shows on all sorts of stuff. So all of the MP3 files are there on the web for you. You can listen. Doesn't cost you anything. And our emails and phone numbers are on there. So we'd like to hear from you if you have ideas for guests, if you have questions, if you find something that's not working. Many thanks to Tony, who emailed us and said, hey, by the way, your archives aren't working. tried to increase the security, which actually just made them inaccessible. So
that's what they call security.
Yeah, okay, forget about that. Increased the security and locked everyone out. Not helpful. So anyway, if you find something that's malfunctioning, please get a hold of us. And like I said, ideas were always up for them. So we're going to revisit China today. We did a program on China and with June a couple of weeks ago, and it basically was her journey from communism to freedom. She moved here when she was 22, and 10 years later, she finally figured out that
it was real.
She'd been lied to the whole time growing up. It was a pretty interesting perspective. So you may want to go back and listen to that. I'll put a link for it on today's page. And just in case we replay the show, it's actually December 2nd of 2018. Every now and then we replay a show. We don't tell anybody when it is. And now we were talking about the president or something, and people got all mad. But it was actually a different president. It was from 2 years ago. So I'm trying to make a point to let people know when we originally air this. Part of that program was also about the forced organ harvesting that happens in China. If you get you step out of line, or you get ratted on by your neighbors, or I guess there's probably just a million different things you could do or maybe not do and just be accused of, you become a political prisoner, and there's no actual term for that. It isn't like you're there for 5 years or something. I think you're just there.
Yeah, you get so they want to let you go.
Yeah, you get blood typed and all that, and then somebody from around the world says, gee, I need a liver transplant. No problem. We can get that for you in 2 weeks. And bang, you get to give up your liver. And these aren't just like organs you can do without, because they do heart transplants and everything else. So we decided we needed more information on that, because something I think people may have heard of but not really learned much about. And so she suggested that we have Dr. Wen Chen on with us today. And so we'll have June in the background, and she had some thoughts for us at the end. She'll probably pipe in before then. As soon as we call her, we haven't called her yet. kind of forgot about her. Got busy. But Dr. Chen was born in China during the Great Cultural Revolution, and being a victim of the horrific atrocity that killed 2 million intellectuals and destroyed traditional Chinese culture, Wen's parents had mixed feelings about her education. Despite their discouragement, she eventually won a national prize in a science competition when she was 16, so she was accepted into a top university for undergraduate study. In 1994, she came to the U.S. for graduate school and received a doctorate in biology at the California Institute of Technology in the year 2000. She currently works as a staff scientist for the institute. And because of her personal experience being brainwashed in China, she decided to become a voice for the voiceless. Since 2012, she's given over 200 presentations to community organizations about Chinese culture, history, and human rights. And her contact information actually is online. So if you would like to contact her about speaking to a group or something, she's got her email and phone number available for you there.
Yeah. So if you have any delusions about where socialism, which is basically the baby brother of communism,
yeah, what it really looks like on the ground,
where it's going to go, and what can happen to you, pay attention.
By the way, we're not going to do it and do it better. I mean, it's been done.
No, it's
and it always turns
done
out bad
a million times, and it always ends up the same.
So our little roadmap today will include her personal life and how forced organ harvesting was first disclosed in L.A. That'll be new information for you and for us as well. And why it's not known by many in the Western world and why we should be worried about it. I think why we should be worried about it is kind of a given, but it's probably important we say that. So I have not, neither of us have spoken to Dr. Chen before, so we're just gonna let her run with it.
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
Hi, hello, can you hear me?
We can, you sound great.
Thank you, Erin and Bill, and nice to talk to you and first time talking to your audiences.
Well, thank you very much for being on today. I know you've got some great information folks are dying to hear about.
Probably a poor choice of words there.
Yeah, okay.
Cancel that.
So where do you want to begin?
So maybe we can first introduce a little bit about myself.
Sure.
As you mentioned, in your introduction, I was born and raised in China, and my parents are survivors of the Cultural Revolution in China. That's between 1966 and 1976. That was for 10 years, the Communist Party thought that any education can give one independent thinking and thus make one criticize the government. So they decided, Mao decided to abandon the whole education system in China and send all the scholars to countryside. And like they killed over like 2 million intellectuals during those 10 years. So my parents graduated from top universities before the Cultural Revolution started. And then immediately they became targets. My dad thought he would become a nuclear scientist. But then he was taken to a coal mine in Sichuan and lived the coal for 10 years.
Well, and great my use mom, for that.
Yeah, I know. I'm so sad for that. And my mom graduated from Renmin University, where like most of the high-level officials of Chinese Communist Party got education from. And she thought she could work for the central government, but then she was sent to a car shop in a different province from my dad and worked as a secretary for the rest of her life in a car shop. And they were married soon after they finished college, but then they were separated into two provinces. They had to live in two places for like 10 years, and they can only see each other for like several weeks per year. And that was how my mom gave birth to both me and my brother, my older brother, and raised us alone. And how they got back together was by the end of the 10th year, my dad's health deteriorated because of the male nutrition and the slave labor in the coal mine. He got like a stomach disease, and three quarters of his stomach was removed. And he lost so much blood that the government thought he was going to die. So they said, okay, send you back to your wife so that she can take care of you. So that's how they transferred my father to my mom's workplace. And he became later on, he my mom basically took very good care of him, and he survived, and then he became a car engineer in the same car shop that my mom worked at. And that was the story of their dream and their life. And so basically I was born at the end of the Cultural Revolution. By the time I went to school, they still were traumatized by this whole thing of the persecution that they got into. Like, they just kept telling me that, you need to learn something at the school, but never be a top student because you get into big trouble. You just need to learn enough to find a job for yourself. And they were all very, very protective. Like, they sent me and my brother to a school that belonged to the car shop. Like, it's a small school. Like, it's not private, it's public, but like most of the teachers were affiliated with that car manufacturing company. And they said, so that we can protect you. It was a very bad school because nobody ever went to college after they finished that school.
Well, nobody wanted to, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was like just because they can protect us, they deliberately placed us there. But it was interesting, maybe because of the dream of my father being a scientist. I had this wish when I was six that I wanted to be a scientist someday. It was really bizarre because scientists at that time was not even a respected job in China because most of the scientists got into jail, right? But I just had this dream. I was really, really into science and math and all this. And So even when I was in that little school, I studied by myself. It was bizarre because my parents got very good education, so they had a lot of a huge book collection at home. So my brother and I read those books all the time, and we were locked up at home. My parents didn't allow me to go out to play with other kids because they wanted to protect us. You know, they didn't want us to say something wrong and then got us into trouble.
Yeah.
So
I can't believe they were allowed to keep the books.
Yeah, that's
kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was like, you know, most of the books were already like filtered. Like most of the books about communism theory or same boring books.
Right.
But they did have a couple books like there were about
secret science books.
Yeah, and a few like books like, you know, that looked very old that, you know, it was already like, you know.
We have to take a really quick break here, Jim. We'll come right back with you in 2 minutes. Got to take a really quick break. You're listening to We the People. Mm-hmm. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Visiting with Dr. Chen, we're actually in the part about her upbringing, and this is so far removed. We're talking during the break about the idea that this is like an American household in reverse. You know,
right.
We're always told go to school, you know, get good grades, do your best, and you're gonna go to college or do whatever. But it was all designed for the future,
and yet
you got sent to school, and they said, you know.
Yeah, you know
too
much. Do a
crummy job and don't stand out.
Yeah, and you know, if you talk to most of the younger folks today and you ask them about the Cultural Revolution in China, they haven't got a clue what you're talking about. They don't know anything about it, and which is really kind of a shame because that is really an indicator of where we could end up if we continue to go down this belief that socialism is really a good thing, that we'll be okay if we can just get the government to pay for everything and
they'll be our benevolent.
Yeah, well, they'll take care of us. So
Dr. Chen, when you were a kid, I mean, how old were you when all this was going on? You're like in elementary school?
Yes, you know, it was already, the Cultural Revolution finished, when I was 3. But still, I'm talking about the whole system of China is still traumatized by this Cultural Revolution.
Sure.
But let's go back to the topic of human rights is why I got interested in this. It's like I had this miraculous experience of then coming to the U.S., as you mentioned. You know, I came to the U.S., I got my PhD degree here. But there was one moment in my life, like, it really changed my view of China because I was born, raised in China despite the fact my parents were persecuted. We were all brainwashed when we were kids. So when I came to the U.S., when I started to work in a lab in Caltech in 1995, my American friends asked me about the Tiananmen Massacre, you know, in 1989. You all know the tank men and, you know, this story. I was totally ignorant about Tiananmen Massacre, and I responded that there was no massacre, I said. I said, no student was killed, because the government showed us pictures of dead soldiers, and we were told that students killed the soldiers at the Tiananmen Massacre. And of course, my American friend said, there's no way you can be brainwashed like this. You know, you can see worldwide media reported this. We have videos and pictures of the killed students. And I said they were all made in by Hollywood. That's what my government told me. And that was me in 1995, a very, very brainwashed Chinese student. And it took me 5 years to awake from this kind of brainwash, because basically I kept reading news, free media, and I got find out, okay, Tiananmen Massacre did happen, lots of students killed, and I found out the truth of the Cultural Revolution that my parents never told me. And also later on, like, you know, the persecution towards Falun Gong and persecution towards Tibetans were all revealed to me. And so by the end of 2000, after I got my job, I got married, I decided that I should speak, you know, for human rights in China, because it was so unfair that I was brainwashed just because nobody told me what was going on.
Do you think your parents knew what was really going on? I mean, was that information they could have even had?
Well, they experienced the persecution of Cultural Revolution, but like they personally experienced. They saw their friends killed. You know, my father kept telling me never be a top student because my best friend was killed during the Cultural Revolution, but they didn't want to tell me that Communist Party is behind it. Like they didn't want to talk anything about politics just so that they could protect
me. Right, right.
Because in China, there's surveillance everywhere. You know, your neighbor can hear your conversation and report you to the police. And nowadays in China, like in every classroom, the government tried to install surveillance camera to capture the speeches of students and teachers. Like, you know, there's surveillance camera everywhere in China.
Yeah, so it's very, very difficult to speak against the government.
Well, you probably wouldn't want to tell your kid anything that they might walk out the door and talk to somebody about.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Say something.
Exactly. Exactly. My parents definitely knew what happened during the Tiananmen Massacre. They knew people were killed, you know, but they didn't want to tell me anything about it. And they just didn't want me to think about anything about this.
Wow. Yeah.
So it took me several years.
They knew how widespread it was at that time. They knew that it was a nationwide crackdown that was happening everywhere. They knew it was a revolution then.
Well, because they saw people get killed. But when you were a kid, and the Cultural Revolution, the big, you know, the big purging of all the intellectuals was over.
Yes.
How? I'm always curious about this part. Okay, so you're going through your day and people disappear. Where?
Yeah.
How does that? Does anybody explain that?
The government brainwash people. They would tell, okay, these people disappeared because they were spies. You know, they were enemies about China. And that's how the Communist Party continuously persecute Chinese people, right? They can still maintain their authority because of the propaganda. So basically, my personal experience of Cultural Revolution is like, you know, my parents told me, all those people were against the government. That's why, like, you know, and the government doesn't like any education, like, you know, so educated people should go to countryside to get a re-education by, you know, working the farm or something.
Right.
And like, they were brainwashed. The whole mindset was twisted. You know, they would say everything the Communist Party said was right. It's just like nowadays, if you go to North Korea, you know, many North Koreans still believe that Kim Jong-un is their God. You know, whatever the God say, they should follow the word.
Sure.
It's just, you can't believe the brainwash. The whole mentality, the whole way, the whole logic is different.
So China, is that predominantly, do people believe, I mean, truly believe that everything is okay in their country? I mean, is this something they've accepted now?
Well, during the Cultural Revolution, definitely people believed that they were the best nation in the world. It's just like North Korea think about themselves, you know. That's typical. Like, you know, that's how exactly the Communist Party want to continue their authority now in China. They still control all the media. They still block the internet so that Chinese people are continuously brainwashed. If you are not exposed to anything else in China since you were a baby, you would believe everything because you live inside a bubble. And you still believe that this is the best nation in the world, like everyone live like this, and you know, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
But Jing will talk later at the end of the conversation about the human rights movement, about how the Chinese people nowadays are breaking the Great Firewall on internet, how they got awakened, and she can go through that later.
Okay.
And, you know, right, at the end of the talk.
Well, when you
come back to my own story, like you wanted to know about how the organ harvesting was first exposed in Los Angeles, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I do have some personal encounter about that because my husband works for the Epoch Times. It's his largest independent Chinese media, a media broadcasting in Chinese news. And so they have chapters everywhere in the world, and Los Angeles is one of the offices. So my husband worked as office manager for the Epoch Times in 2006. And it was in March 2006, one day she came back and looked really, really depressed and asked him what's going on. She said, we got a very special visitor today to our office. And she said she was a nurse from China and her ex-husband was a military surgeon. And she told us that her ex-husband killed 2,000 Falun Gong practitioners in a hospital in China, called Su Jiacheng Hospital, and took corneas from them for transplant.
Wow.
And he told me that the nurse told them like they had like 6,000 Falun Gong detained in the underground facility of that hospital, and then, you know, by the time she left, there was only like 2,000 left. So it was, I couldn't believe that.
I mean,
I knew the Chinese government used death row prisoners for them. That is known for a long time. Like they kill people, they sentence people to death, and then they execute when the buyers show up. I knew that for a long time. But I couldn't believe that they take innocent Falun Gong practitioners' organ, that they were live people, and such a scale, like, you know, in one hospital, they can kill several thousand people. I just couldn't believe that at that time. Like, so just like any other reporter for the Epoch Times, like, so, oh, we'd better do some research about that. And of course, like, the reporters immediately started their research. And immediately within weeks, I saw reports that, you know, they found something very suspicious in China because all the websites of Chinese hospitals or organ transplant centers say they can find donors within 1 to 4 weeks. I mean, that's impossible. I'm a biologist.
Yeah, that's not possible.
We all know, like, it's impossible. You need to wait for, like, 3 to 7 years for someone who happened to have same blood type and die from car accident. It's normal to wait for several years. And if every hospital promised like 1 to 4 weeks, that definitely means they have tons of donors waiting for you to take their organs. And you may think, oh, China is a big country, right? They have lots of car accidents. Yeah, that's true. But
not that many.
No. In reality, China does not even have a valid organ donation system because Chinese people for thousands of years believe in Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism. And all traditional beliefs have one thing in common. They believe in reincarnation. And if you believe that you're going to be reborn, you're going to need all your parts. Yeah, you don't want your heart to go to this one person and your liver. It's like very strange to donate your organ, like not even to your family member. So according to Red Cross China, in the year 2010, the whole nation, only 37 people registered as donors.
Oh, well, that's telling.
Whole nation.
We'll come.
Yeah,
we need to take a really quick break here, and we're going to come right back. Our guest is Dr. Chen. We're discussing China and all these special things that go on with forced organ harvesting. Should set your hair on fire today. We'll be right back.
Talking about organ transplants.
Talking about stealing other people's organs and giving them to other people.
Yeah. And You were saying that only 37 people in China registered for a transplant program, and yet thousands are being done every year.
Well, they registered to what? Donate their organs, right?
Yeah, they register as donors,
right.
But like, you know, but they don't die. They can't donate until they die. But if you look at the numbers published by Chinese hospitals, China perform about between 60,000 to 100,000 transplants per year.
Holy
cow. That's just unbelievable. Yeah. Like, if you think about the death row prisoners, China execute about 2,000 death row prisoners per year. That's already 95% of worldwide execution. But, 2,000 people is not enough for 100,000 transplants.
No, that still falls really short. So when you, I guess we had, every time we talk about this subject, we wind up with more questions than we have answers, obviously. So one of the discussions that we had over Thanksgiving, it made for a very interesting dialogue over Thanksgiving. We were wondering, when people get, I'm assuming they just come knock down their door and grab them and say, we heard you said whatever. Is there any kind of a trial, or do you just disappear and that's considered permanent?
China had this, before 2013, China had this labor camp system. So basically, police can arrest anyone and put them to labor camp, basically it's jail, without any trial. And in 2013, under the international pressure, they canceled the labor camp system, so they just directly sent people to jail. And they have this thing called a show trial. Basically, it's just like they already decided how many years you're going to be sentenced to. And they just go through the procedure. And for example, Falun Gong practitioners, right? The government would appoint lawyers for you, but then the lawyers cannot defend you as guilty, as not guilty. Like, they have to say you're guilty, and then they have to accept. Basically, it's a show. The lawyer is fake, and the judge is fake. Everything's already decided ahead of time.
Wow, don't get in the system.
So there's nobody ever gets out, I guess, is maybe my bottom line question.
Yeah. Nobody ever gets out unless, like, the authority decided to release this person.
Wow.
And sometimes, like, when there are international pressure, like, for example, Amnesty International may try to rescue certain individuals who has high profile, and then maybe under, for example, if the U.S. government say, hey, you can't sentence this person to jail and, like, he's innocent, and then maybe that victim could be released. The government may release him or her, under international pressure.
But not very
and
often.
That's not very often. Like, usually they are, like, very high-profile activists.
So when you came here, let's go backwards a little bit to your story of this. Okay, so you grow up in this system where you're not supposed to do a good job in school because that'll get you in trouble. You're not supposed to be a scientist for sure, and you're kind of a scientist and you're good at school. How do you wind up coming to the United States to study? How did that all come about?
How did that happen? Okay, let's go back to my personal story. Like, I had this fantasy of being a scientist, so I was really interested in chemistry and astronomy, and so I spent most of the time reading by myself. My brother was five years older than me. He bought some books, like in math and science, when he was in school. And after he went to college, and I started to read the books he bought. So basically, most of the book I read was inherited from my brother. Like, he collected them after the Cultural Revolution. He spent all his spare money. He saved all his money to buy books about science and math, and something about history also. That was how I self-taught myself. And I would say it's totally a miracle. And, my school was very small. And someday, this teacher said, hey, let's go to this new thing called Chemistry Olympiad, like just get our students to some exposure, like, Chemistry Olympiad. They didn't expect anything to happen, but it was free to join. And so I went, and it was just a miracle. I got first place in the province. And then I went to the national. I got first place in the national in chemical theory. And, that prize allowed me to go to any university in China. So right after the prize was announced, like, I immediately got an offer from several top universities in China. it was funny, like, at that time, my parents didn't want me to go. They said, like, you know, we don't want to go to the top university. Let's, you know, talk to the college in our neighborhood, like, to see whether they can accept you. So they indeed talked to the college, like, you know, in the neighborhood. And they just thought my mother was crazy. And they said, like, your daughter already got offers from Peking University and, like, all these top universities in China. You know, don't waste our time, like, asking us to give her an offer. And so was how my...
but that would be kind of counter to what they were brought up to believe. Because if you're going to get this great education, doesn't that kind of target you for... some bad stuff if the government doesn't really want you to be an independent thinker? I mean, is that going to line you up to end up in a labor camp someplace?
Cultural Revolution 2.0.
They were very afraid of the Cultural Revolution coming back.
I bet.
Because they knew if I went to a good university, that means I could become a very, you know, very eye-catching student, and
right.
I could get into trouble. They were still traumatized about.
Right. Does the current government in China, do they encourage higher education now? Do they want the students to get, degrees in science and math and become well-educated people?
I think, like, you have to understand in a different way. Like, the current government really want to send students to the U.S. and the other countries so that they can get the technology back to China.
Right.
So it's a totally different
So they have to trust
scenario.
You to come back
yeah.
once you come over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, they do want some students to become top so that they can send them to places like United States and, you know, to get the... You know, get your technology back to China.
Sure.
You know, that's a totally different topic about like a stealing technology, about
sure.
like a
yeah.
you know, steal of intellectual property. That's a totally different
okay.
category.
So,
like,
so let's go
we
back
can
to
talk
your...
about that later, but not today.
Yeah, yeah. let's talk yeah. about how you
so you
got
go
an
to
opportunity.
This college,
yeah, you got an opportunity to get an
university.
Education. And then what happened?
Yeah, so my parents had to let me go to one of the universities there. So I went to one of the a very top university called University of Science and Technology of China. So it was a very good one. I wanted to go to Beijing University, but that was too eye-catching because, you know, Peking University was famous for speaking out against the government.
Right.
And so my parents forbade me to go. Like, so I had to choose a different, like, university, like, orientated towards, like, science and technology. It was almost like MIT in China. And then once I went there, like, of course, my path was out of my parents' control. Like, everyone in my class applied for graduate school in the U.S. or Europe. So I just followed the trend. I came
right.
to the U.S. Yeah.
Okay. And so how did you end up staying?
How did I end up staying? Caltech offered me a job as a staff scientist. So actually, you know, together with that, they could offer me, get a green card. But I didn't, use Caltech's money to get my green card because my husband practiced Falun Gong. When I graduated, the persecution towards Falun Gong already started.
Mm-hmm.
And we both spoke for human rights in China, and our picture were all in all major media. I still have a copy of Los Angeles Times. In 2000 or so, like they had a four-page picture of me.
So you pretty much couldn't go home.
Yeah, there's no way for me to go home, like, because I'm already so well now.
Because of your involvement in human rights.
She spoke out, so she
yeah.
goes directly to
yeah.
the
yeah.
countryside, as you said, which sounds nice until
wow.
you find out what's out there. And so how old were you when you came here?
I was 21 when I came to the United
States. Okay, so very similar to June. And at that time,
yes.
did you, because with her story, she had said it took her like 10 years here to figure out that the whole picture that she had been shown in China was basically a lie.
Mm-hmm.
When you came
mm-hmm.
here, did you already know there was something funky
no,
going on back
know.
Home?
I was as brainwashed as she was. I guess like well, most of the Chinese students came like brainwashed like that.
Interesting. So it's pretty common.
Yeah, we were all like that. It's just like, I think it's just like later on after came to the U.S., how receptive are you to the free society, right?
Right.
Like if you still stick to the Chinese media that's controlled by the government of China, you continue to be brainwashed. You stay like that. You can stay, you know, live in that bubble for the rest of your life. And, you know, but and gradually I was exposed to more information about what's going on in China. And I think like that was because I started to know about the Falun Gong in 1998, actually, when I was a third year graduate student in Caltech. It was interesting because at that time, Falun Gong was not yet persecuted by Chinese government. At that time, the Chinese consulate promoted Falun Gong and Taiji as traditional Chinese culture. They encourage people to learn because all this meditation helps people to get better health and helps the government to save the medical bill. So almost all Chinese students in Caltech learned about Falun Gong, and you know, they read the book or learned the movement, and some started the practice, some didn't. They were too busy or they're not into meditation. So I started learn Falun Gong in 1998. I found it a very good meditation. It helped me to relieve the stress, and you know, I used to sleep like 10 hours per day because I had very poor sleeping quality. And life as a graduate student at Caltech was very stressful, so I got into conflicts with my classmates or colleagues all the time. I was very unhappy. But the teachings of Falun Gong gave me a very peaceful mind. You know, I meditate, I learned to look inward. Whenever I had conflicts with others, I stopped pointing fingers at others. Instead, I tried to improve myself to be a better person. And I found it very helpful. And I got, you know, 2 years after I studied the meditation, I finished my graduate school smoothly. And then I got married and I met my husband. He also practiced Falun Gong. So, you know, we had a very good family. You know, we have two daughters now.
Oh, good for
you.
And then you started learning what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That was how I learned about Falun Gong. But like, you know, what really surprised me, like, you know, the government of China supported it when I started the meditation. But, you know, in 1999, the government saw that there were so many people practicing Falun Gong, about 10% of Chinese population do Falun Gong. They started worried. They thought it's a threat because this is independent from communism.
Right.
And although this is not really a church or temple thing, it's like a meditation, self-teaching, you know, self-improving school. But just like a cultural revolution, like they don't like any independent thinking to become popular. Like, you know, my parents, they were persecuted just because of the education, because the government saw like they were educated so they can criticize the government. And the same thing happens to Falun Gong because when it became so popular, the government started to say, hey, this meditation is not controlled by the communism. You know, if they follow the principle of truthfulness, compassion, tolerance, we can't brainwash them easily.
They might get
away.
And
that is true, right?
Well,
yeah,
sure.
That is true. Like, if you have your own principle, one cannot be easily brainwashed. And that's exactly why Communist Party persecuted Christians, persecuted Tibetans. You know, all these people, once they feel like, you know, you have your own spiritual path or your own education, your own principle, you know, they think you are a threat.
Well, you can't serve two masters. You can't, you know.
Well, yeah,
they want the government to be the first one. So,
The Communist Party always wants to play the role of God.
Of course, yeah. What a great job for them! They're so good at it. We need to take a really quick break. We're speaking with Dr. Chen. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. song they play when you get promoted in school and get good grades.
Yeah. We were talking on the break about people in this country. You know, you were talking about being brainwashed. You know, people in this country have grown up with free speech and freedom their whole life. And I think they have a hard time really mentally grasping the idea that it could really be that bad somewhere else. I mean, you can say pretty much anything you want anywhere. You know, I mean, it's and what I was saying is, you know, you don't even have free speech in England. I mean, the free speech is a big thing, and I think we totally take it for granted.
Yeah, people think they're being silenced here. It's like, oh no,
not like other places.
So, was there, we had this conversation with June. I was just curious. Did you also have something that happened? Was it just an accumulation of information, or was it a thing that like turned the lights on for you and you thought, wait a second, I think I need to investigate this further? I mean, was it one thing that did it for you?
Yeah, like, you know, it was accumulative, but there was one transition point that, you know, totally changed my mind about how I think about the Communist Party. So although I knew, like, a lot of atrocities happened in China, I would have been naive to think, oh, maybe the government didn't know what was going on. Maybe they got some, they were misinformed. So soon after the persecution towards Falun Gong started, like, we started to write letters to Chinese government. Like, I typed mailing letters, you know, submitted by fellow Falun Gong practitioners, and I mailed them out. Every day I typed letters. You know, we try to tell the government that this is a good meditation. It doesn't hurt the government. You know, we all support, you know, the government, and, like, we're not political. And like, we never received any response. And then, like, in January 2001, you know, the news came from China. Like, the Chinese government claimed that on Tiananmen Square, five Falun Gong practitioners set themselves on fire. And they claimed, like, okay, this is cult, and the teachings made them to set themselves on fire. So we all saw that a video broadcast by Chinese TV, and we realized that it was staged, because number one, Falun Gong does not allow suicide, and because suicide and killing is a sin according to the teaching of Falun Gong, and also as the teaching of all the Buddha schools in China, Tao schools in China, like, you're not supposed to kill yourself. So there's no way Falun Gong practitioners kill themselves, even to protest. That's against the teachings. And also we saw the video that released by the Chinese government. We immediately see, like, tons of loopholes. Like, you know, it's like, you know, those people set themselves in fire. It looks like they were staged. Like, basically they claim, like, you know, they're on fire, but their hair were not burnt. You know, when you're on fire, your hair should be burnt first. But their hair were fine, but when they just said they were on fire, they looked dark. And they also, one of the victims claimed on TV that he drank a gallon, like, 1 liter of gasoline. And I just thought, that's no way. I'm a biologist. I know, like, you can't live after you drink 1 gallon gasoline. It's toxic. And like, all these footages, like, later on, like, they removed them from the footages, you know. But I knew they staged the Tiananmen. Immolation, just to demonize Falun Gong. They wanted the world to believe that this is a cult. That was a transition point. At the beginning, I saw the government made a mistake because they were misinformed. But after I saw that staged immolation case, I realized the Chinese Communist Party, they always knew that this is an innocent group. They deliberately demonized this group just to justify their persecution. And I also realized that that was how I was fooled by about the Tiananmen massacre, right? Like, the government deliberately showed us, like, dead body soldiers and said, like, the students killed them. That's how they demonized the students during the Tiananmen massacre. And I realized, like, all my life, the government has been lying to us, to brainwash us, and that was the transition point in my mind. Like, I had a clear understanding what the Communist Party of China is about.
When that happened, where is the rest of your family at that time? Is your brother and your parents, are they still all back in China?
They're all in China. They were all in China, and they still are in China.
Oh, they're still there.
They are still there, yeah. So I haven't been back to China since 1998. So ever since I picked up the topic about human rights in China, I didn't go back because I knew the risk. I know what they could have they
sure.
do to my family. So I have been very careful. I do not go back to China. And I never told my parents and my brother about what I do. I mean, they know I practice Falun Gong. They know I can't go back. But they are always naive. They said, oh, you're not famous, so you should be fine. Maybe the government doesn't know you. And I never clarify to them anything. I just say, I'm busy. I don't want to go back now. So maybe you can come back to visit me.
So
we can meet in Hong Kong.
I'd
rather they don't know.
Yeah, you can't very well call them on the telephone because I'm sure all that's monitored.
Yeah.
Have they been persecuted because of your actions?
Well, it's interesting.
They can't tell her,
Yeah, I mean, my brother is a government official. He got his PhD in China in economy, and he serves as a government official. So he lives the life of an elite class. So he gives my parents good life. And I did ask my brother and my parents, like, did you ever get into trouble? Because I know other public speakers like me, their parents were threatened. You know, their family was threatened. Some even got arrested. They went through a lot of problems. But my parents always told me, don't worry, we take care of everything. You know, don't worry about us.
Like, well, your brother is like the get-out-of-jail-free card, which is kind of awesome.
I mean, I really hope. Like, you know, I try not to get them involved in this.
Sure.
Especially I haven't been back to China for 20 years, right? So I hope, like,
So are they
innocent about it?
Are they
about what
so?
I'm
there
doing.
Are they ever allowed? So they're not allowed to come here. They've never seen their grandkids or anything.
My parents came to the U.S. 3 times. My brother has never come. It was interesting, like how my parents came. Like, you know, at the beginning they couldn't get a visa because the U.S. embassy just keep asking, like, why your daughter never came back to China. And then I wrote a letter to the U.S. embassy, like, I passed a letter to my parents using a secure way. Say, just show this letter to the embassy, like, when you get visa. Basically, in that letter, I told the visa officer what I do, like, I speak for human rights in China, and I can't go back. If you don't allow my parents to come, we'll never see each other again. So then they gave my parents a visa and said, you're a special case, and we'll always give you a visa as long as you come back on time.
Oh.
So my parents later came here 3 times. To see my daughters.
Oh, that's good.
But now they're in their 80s. They can't travel anymore.
So
they haven't been to the U.S. for like quite a few years, for 7 or 8 years. They haven't been here. So they're too old to travel.
How difficult. And I think this, again, is something that people who grew up and currently reside in the United States have no concept that of what this would be like, not just as an individual, but for an entire family, because it doesn't just affect one person.
Yeah, it just affect you.
So, Dr. Chen, we are hitting the top of the hour here. We're going to have to take a little news break, and then we're going to give June a call, and she'll be on with you the second hour. So we'll continue. Actually, we need to get back into the organ harvesting information, which is usually where we go in the second hour of these types of shows. So we'll be scaring everybody in the second hour. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm already
scared. And look at that. We made it in the right time.
Jared, you owe me.